The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome in, students of the game. My name is Alex Bauman, and I'm joined by my co-host today, Nathan Gladwell and Gray Oldenburg. We have a full house once again. Been a minute since we've had that, so glad to have all three of us back and ready for the show today. We got an interesting topic to start off with, Gray. I'm glad you're here for it. Because
Throw me in. Let's go.
I personally need some help understanding what was going through this Auburn fans' brain when they put this sign up. But during College Game Day, Gray, there was a sign that read Auburn was in a blue blood. Can you explain to me why Auburn thinks they're in a blue blood?
So I would say there's two sides to this. The side that I'm on is that's a joke. Like that's something that, yes, Auburn has sustained more success with Bruce Pearl than they have in their entire basketball history. And yes, that is more than some of the blue bloods have done the past 6 or 7 years, but so have other teams. That doesn't make you a blue blood. So I'm on the side that it's a joke, but there's another side that I believe this kid on College Game Day was on. Auburn fans are very new to basketball. And it shows a lot. And the majority of the fan base, and I'll throw a lot of other teams into this as well, including Alabama, but there are some new basketball fans in these fan bases because down here in the South, especially in the state of Alabama, it runs through football. We got football fans down here. So I don't know if a lot of people know the true definition of blue blood. And I think there's some delusion to that in a lot of fan bases. The four blue bloods, I don't put UCLA in that category. The four blue bloods are North Carolina, Kansas, Duke, and Kentucky, and they will stay that way forever.
Nathan, any thoughts on this situation here with this fan?
Yeah, I was just, thinking it was just to piss everyone off. Of course, it always gets to me because like this is the most outrageous comment you can make. And you go on College Game Day making signs about it. And it definitely gets me riled up. But like Gray said, there are a lot of people who are new to basketball in the state of Alabama who have not paid attention. Some of us have been through here through the hardships and know how bad it can be. And now that the getting's good, people just automatically think that we should be. Because this goes to Alabama fans too. I know several people who are just like over the top about Alabama being one of the best schools in the country, and no doubt they play some great basketball. But when it comes down to being a blue blood, you had to have same success throughout history. I'm talking about winning multiple national championships. And let's face it, Alabama and Auburn have not done that to this point. So no, we do not fit the criteria of blue blood, and we never will. I hear the phrase that new blood thrown around a lot as well, and you might be able to come close to throwing both of those teams in that category, but we'll see over the next few years how that goes. But as far as blue blood, that's never going to happen.
So we're talking about Auburn being a blue blood, would y'all consider somebody like UConn sort of entering that conversation as a blue blood here with their championship last year? I believe they won a championship the past 3 decades.
Yeah, I would consider
on the verge. New blood is exactly right.
Yeah, UConn's the perfect example for that because no, I don't think that they've had the history of North Carolina, Duke, Kansas, or Kentucky, but they've won 3 national championships over the past, 15 years, and they won it last year, and they're looking dominant this year, and they've had sustained success ever since Kimball Walker was a thing. So yeah, that is a new blood, and that is what Auburn and Alabama are trying to get to, is to get to that level of UConn where it's like, oh, we've won, 2 or 3 national championships. We've been to 3 or 4 Final Fours, in the past, however many years. That's what Auburn and Alabama are trying to get to. Not there yet.
There's a big old hump.
There's a giant hump to get over that. Cause that is incredibly hard to sustain that success. But, I would consider UConn a new blood, but I wouldn't put them in a category of like the Carolina and Duke and Kansas and Kentucky.
All right, let's move on to some Alabama here. Nathan, I'm going to pose this question to you because you really love your Alabama basketball. Do you think this team is better than last year's team?
Yeah, I think it does. And it comes from the fact that this team has more sustained shooting throughout its whole starting five and its bench. You look at last year's team, there was a heavy reliance on Brandon Miller and Noah Clowney to make plays. And then let's face it, tournament time, Brandon Miller did not play his best basketball. And we relied on guys like Javon Quinterly to go loose through the tournament. And we see how that worked out. I think Mark Sears being able to be a more dominant guard this season and being able to really be the general at the floor has really improved this team's shooting. I mean, you look how many 100-point games they put up this season. They're on the verge of tying the all-time SEC record in a season. I think you look at efficiency, offensive efficiency has been way better. Or I think the shooting from the outside is better. I believe our three-point percentage is higher.
5% higher.
And you look at the offensive rating as a whole, I mean, second in the country. And it just flips back and forth every single week between second and first. So that's what's keeping us afloat. The only thing that's different is last year's team had a lot better defense. And I'll say the current defensive rating for us right now is not great, but there's been improving every single week. And I think that by the time we've reached the SEC tournament, this team as a whole will be a lot better, well-rounded than last year's team. And that comes from the fact that the bench gives a lot of solid minutes. But I will say one thing that would have made this team complete is a guy in Charles Bediako. We are desperately missing a rim protector. Grant Nelson's trying to be that. He tries his best, but let's face it, Charles Bediako would have been the cherry on top. And this team might be a national championship favorite if he was back.
Great. You agree with Nathan here that this team was better than last year's?
Yeah. Yeah, well, Nathan nailed it right there. I think offensively, this team is better than last year's. I think they're more efficient. I think they are more well-rounded. They don't rely on a guy like Brandon Miller, who's doing better for the Hornets anyway. and I think Mark Sears has taken a step offensively, which is crazy because he was incredible offensively mm-hmm. last year. He's even better this year. And I feel like it's deeper offensively. Throughout the bench, you've got shooters everywhere. My issue with this team comes into the defensive side. the defensive from the guard perspective as well is not matched to what last year's team was at all. Because Alabama last year defensively was dangerous. I mean, Jane Bradley, Rylan Griffin were unbelievable. Then you had a guy like Bediako back there who's an eraser, who's top three in the SEC in blocks per game. The Alabama doesn't have that this year. The loss of Bediako was brutal. And the change from Bediako to Grant Nelson at center is a massive drop off in terms of in the defensive side of things. I don't know. This Alabama team is very every team's bipolar this year. Mm-hmm. But if Alabama shoots the ball, yes, it literally. if Alabama shoots the ball well, I think the only team in the country that can beat them is UConn.
Yeah, I agree. I think Alabama has that offense to win a national championship, but when it comes down to that defense, it's a huge question mark. Because if they had a defense like UConn or Houston or Virginia, this team would be top five in the country. There'd be no argument. But just that lack of defense is going to be what comes to bite them in the butt if they don't get to where they want to be.
I did have a question to pose here. So Rylan Griffin last season really was more of a six man coming off the bench, averaging around 6 points a game, around 2.5 rebounds, three. This year, have you felt like he's kind of taken that step to become a great, I guess, small forward or shooting guard, whatever you need him to be at this point in time?
I think he's a good 3-and-D wing. I think he knocked out. We saw in the Auburn game. I mean, he was electric. He just came to the game and started banging threes left and right. But for me, for Rylan Griffin, he just does not have the capabilities of dribbling a basketball. He has close to zero bag. So that's a big issue with Rylan Griffin is his inability to dribble the basketball and sort of do drill moves. So that'll be his issue going forward. But there has been a massive amount of growth from last year to this year and his ability to create his own shot and to knock down those shots.
For sure. For sure.
And Grant knows that firsthand.
Yeah, he came in and just made everything, especially in the one in Coleman where Alabama won by four. He was shooting it from anywhere, heavily contested, knocking it down. Rylan Griffin's taken a huge step in that aspect, and he's an incredible defender. He's long. He's the perfect 3-and-D guy. Alex nailed it. But he's not going to create his own shot. But when you have a guy like Mark Sears, well, you don't need to be the creator. Mark Sears is the creator.
Yeah. Just get open.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And another thing on this team too, the current team, Aaron Estrada coming in, transferring in, averaging around 13 points a game, 5 rebounds. And 4 assists a game. And how tall is Aaron Estrada? He's like, what, 6'4", or something like that, around that height. He's not super tall. He's not super lengthy. But I think this team hustles a lot more on rebounds. And there's a huge reliance on guys like Grant Nelson and Jaron Stevenson who come into the game and get boards, because they're looked on to become rim protectors, and their first option is stopping the ball, and then it's whoever gets the box out and gets the rebound. And I think Native's just preached that these past few games. But when you look at the stat sheet and the breakdown, I like to compare Aaron Estrada to a guy in Javon Quinterly last season who was really that two guard.
Oh, Lord.
And let's be honest, Aaron Estrada fits the bill way more than the guy in Javon Quinterly. And that's not a knock against him. That's just the fact that I think Aaron Estrada is way more experienced, and he's a better shooter, flat out.
So come tournament time, were you going to expect Aaron Estrada to take it up on the San Diego State Center 4 different times and get blocked 4 different times?
Well, if it does that, the game's probably already off, Alex. Let's be honest here.
Oh, that was an experience watching that. Just turn it off after the first block and go to bed. That's about what that was. All right, let's move on to some NFL here. Nathan, we covered the Super Bowl last week briefly. I know you had a little bit of an issue. We had to calm you down a little bit, but let's just discuss what kind of the fallout from the Super Bowl here, with the 49ers firing defensive coordinator Steve Wilks less than a week after that 25-22 loss to the Kansas City Chiefs. Do y'all agree with the 49ers sort of making Wilks the scapegoat here and letting him go, even though he only gave up 25 points to Patrick Mahomes?
Nathan, you can go first on that. I don't agree.
This was an awful firing. I think you look around the league at the current defensive coordinator pool or people who had the option to become a defensive coordinator, and Steve Wilks, you look at what he did this season, you bring up the Super Bowl, holding Kansas City in an overtime loss to 25 points is special. I mean, a lot of other teams cannot say that, and I felt like the main thing that got the 49ers to the Super Bowl this season was the defense. You talk about the NFC championship game against the Lions. They were down early. I know they gave a lot of points early in the first half, but the fact that their defense was able to string together stops in that game gave the offense a chance to come back and lead them to the Super Bowl. So I think the defense throughout the regular season was able to win them more games than not. And I know that you look at the offense, you look at how many powerhouse targets you have. You have Christian McCaffrey back there, Brandon Ayuk, Debo Samuel, and George Hill. You can go across the board, keep naming players. But you look at the defense and how talented it was, and it did its job all season long for the most part, outside of a few games that might have just been an off night.
Yeah, I'll put it like this. You know, a year ago, if you would have told me that Brock Purdy led the 49ers to the Super Bowl, even with the loss, if you would have told me Brock Purdy led the 49ers to a Super Bowl, I'd have been like, and you would have told me that they fired their defensive coordinator after the Super Bowl, I was like, that doesn't make any sense. Because if Brock Purdy's in the Super Bowl, as much as Brock Purdy was better than I thought he was going to be, that was on their defense. That defense is not only incredibly talented, but Steve Wilks had that defense playing the best, one of the best playoffs I've seen in a long time, even with this loss. They held this Kansas City team to 19 points in regulation.
Yeah,
that, and I think Kansas City team, that hadn't happened almost all year. This is a shocking firing, and now it's like, well, who do you go get?
I got Gray's answer here. It's been reported that Brandon Staley is the guy for Kyle Shanahan.
Pack it up. We're done for the day. I think we're good here.
I just don't know how more of a downgrade you can get from Steve Wilks to Brandon Staley. I don't know if Kyle Shanahan didn't watch Chargers games last season or what. I think Steve Wilks should have been the coach in Carolina. I don't know why he's in San Francisco. I thought he should have been the head coach last season instead of Frank Reich. But, you know, I don't make the decisions for the Carolina Panthers, obviously. I also think it's funny to point out that DeMeco Ryans gave up 31 points to Philadelphia and Jalen Hurts and lost that and lost two straight NFC championship games. And then he gets that coaching job in Houston. And then you got Robert Saleh, who gives up 31 in the Super Bowl and then gets the head coaching job for New York. I know those guys are doing great things. DeMeco Ryans, Robert Saleh, he's having his struggles because his quarterback's terrible. But it's like we get those guys benefit of the doubt. But Steve Wilks gives up 25 points to Patrick Mahomes. And we go ahead and kick him out. I don't understand that decision at all. I don't know what Kyle Shanahan thinks he's going to do to bring in a different defensive coordinator that's going to do something better than Steve Wilks did. I mean, like y'all both pointed out, I think he had that defense playing really good football. And then the Chiefs side of things, guys. I don't know if we covered this trade or not, but the Tyreek Hill trade to the Miami Dolphins. But just look at what the Chiefs have done since they traded Hill. 7-0 in the playoffs, 2 Super Bowl rings. And they have turned the 5 picks they got for Tyreek Hill into Trent McDuffie, Sky Moore, Darian Kennard, Rashee Rice, and Kendrick Coburn. They still have a 5th-round pick. So do y'all think the Chiefs won that trade at the end of the day?
You want to go first, Gray? Or you want to
go back with it? You know, when that trade was made, no. when I look at what the Dolphins have done with Tyreek Hill, no, but then you think about, they won 2 Super Bowls, haven't lost in the playoffs like they did when Tyreek was there, maybe. and obviously the two names I look at the list when we talk about what they've turned those picks into, and they still have another pick this upcoming year from the Dolphins, Rashee Rice and Trent McDuffie. That may be worth it right there. And Tyreek's unbelievable. Tyreek's one of the best, if not the best, wide receiver in the NFL. And the Dolphins are loving having him. This trade seems more even than it originally sounded.
This is one of the things I go back and forth on. Like I get the Chiefs playoff success, but the main contributor to that was Patrick Mahomes. He basically was Tom Brady at quarterback and took care of business in the playoffs. And whatever surrounding cast he had. I love Tyreek Hill. I think he adds a whole nother dimension to the Dolphins team. And the fact that the Dolphins were able to get him, and it has changed their offense so much. And I think it's helped them overall. They have not had the postseason success that they have wanted. I think there have been some bad rolls of dice for them at the end of the day. And the Chiefs might have been a little bit more favorable. So it's like a win-win situation. Also kind of a win-lose for the Dolphins. Because you look at it and you're like, oh, well, they don't have 2 Super Bowl rings. They haven't won a playoff game. It's hard to dissect, but the addition of Tyreek Hill, let's be honest, it's still going on. Until Tyreek leaves Miami, then the trade won't be fully finished, in my opinion. But as of right now, it's easy to say that the Chiefs have won it. But I look at the players they get. Trent McDuffie, he's been outstanding this season. Sky Moore he's had his moments. He's been off and off the field. Darian Kennard's been a good rotational player. Rashee Rice he added a good bit of offense this season in the lack of Kadarius Toney being able to catch a football. I think the Chiefs have hit on a lot of their picks, and that just goes back to their front office being really good. About who they draft. And at the end of the day, the Chiefs with Patrick Mahomes are going to be a better situation, trade or not, whenever they give their best player. Let's say they lost Travis Kelce and they traded him away somewhere. I'm still thinking the Chiefs are going to be able to put enough around Patrick Mahomes that he can go and win another Super Bowl. That's just the facts of it, because he is, at this point in time, one of the best quarterbacks the NFL has ever seen.
Yeah, I think Nathan hit the nail on the head there with talking about how basically the Chiefs just need Patrick Mahomes and they'll be fine on offense. Yeah. And Patrick Mahomes proved it this season. He didn't need barely any weapons. Travis Kelce really didn't have a great year, and Patrick Mahomes is still doing great things. I think Rashee Rice was amazing. I think he has superstar potential, especially in that Chiefs offense. And I don't think he'll be as good as Hill was, but he can be a pretty good receiver. For the Dolphins, like Nathan pointed out as well, he really turned that offense around, really gave it a new dimension. But when you have Tua Tagovailoa throwing Tyreek Hill the football, it's going to be rough. Tua either throws the most beautiful pass you've ever seen, or underthrows the receiver team. to the other team, or underthrow the receiver by 15 yards. It's just weird for Tyreek Hill to go from Patrick Mahomes to Tua. I mean, I would say I feel bad for the dude, but he wanted out and he got what he wanted. So he seems happy. Do you think the Dolphins move on from Tua?
No, I don't think they do. I think, he's been pretty good in the regular season, and he's been able to put up the numbers. So there's not really anything stopping him per se from doing the same thing in the playoffs. So he just hasn't yet. And let's be honest, he got his first chance this season. He was hurt the entire last season. So I think going away from Tua would be a mistake at this point in time. Now, if it's 1 or 2 years down the line and they still haven't won a playoff game, then I'm saying, yeah, well, let's go ahead and look for the next quarterback to draft or make a deal in free agency or something along those lines. Because at this point in the NFL, if you're not having that success at the quarterback position, then it's a split second decision that needs to be made. You can't just be sitting on one quarterback. Saints. So anyway, moving on from that, I think Tua is he could be a great quarterback in the league. He just has not had the playoff success yet.
Gray, any thoughts on Tua?
I would agree with that. It's a not yet situation. Tua's a good enough quarterback with the wide receivers that he's got, especially if Jalen Waddle comes back healthy. He'll be fine. That offense is going to be unbelievable under Mike McDaniel. They just got to put together a few things, stay healthy, continue to improve, and yeah, they'll be fine.
Offensive line can't get hurt. That's a start.
Exactly. Just stay healthy.
Yeah, yeah. That is a big thing, staying healthy. That's been an issue for the Dolphins for the past 2 years. Teron Armstead, Jalen Waddle, Tyreek Hill, all dealt with injuries. I mean, it's just like the injury carousel over there. Who gets injured next? All right, moving on to some NBA here, guys. Let's start off before we get into All-Star Weekend and all this. The Milwaukee Bucks and Doc Rivers. Because we've had the time to sit here and let Doc Rivers coach 10 games. 3-7 record as the head coach of the Milwaukee Bucks, with losses to the Portland Trailblazers, Utah Jazz, and the Memphis Hustle, basically. That's basically who he lost to. He didn't lose to the Grizzlies. And the team is bottom 20 in league offensive rating and defensive rating. And compared to Adrian Griffin, who was fired in favor of Doc Rivers, he was 30-13 and had the team top 10 in the league in offensive and defensive rating. So, guys, here, take the floor on what you think about Doc Rivers.
Why is Doc Rivers coaching?
That's a good question there, Greg.
Okay, they fired Adrian Griffin when they were 30-13 and number one in the East, and they were looking incredible. I mean, they were playing the best basketball that the Bucks have played since that championship, since the championship season, and before that, probably Oscar Robertson. So they fire him, and it sounds like it was more of a player's decision. It sounds like it was a player's, like, we want Doc Rivers, because it was so instant right after the firing of Adrian Griffin. It was Doc Rivers, like, what, maybe a day difference, maybe less. I don't even remember. And they're 3-7 since, and losses to some of the worst teams in the NBA, embarrassing losses to some of the worst teams in the NBA. And their efficiency ratings have just sunk. My only thought on this is maybe Doc Rivers shouldn't be coaching. Doc Rivers hit his prime for the Boston Celtics, and it should have stayed that way.
You know, Gray was pretty nice about what he said. He said it was a player's decision. It was a Giannis Antetokounmpo decision. Once the front office found out that Giannis wasn't happy that Adrian Griffin wasn't drawing up a play for him every 2 seconds and feeding him the ball and then putting his crappy brother on the court to go run around for 15 minutes. he said, yeah, well, let's get the coach out of here. Well, let's bring in someone with more experience. Someone who can consecutively lose a 7-game series and blow 3-1 leads. Doc Rivers, come on in. Show this stuff to broadcasting because this dude cannot coach. And there's been no improvement. There's only been regression. The defense has been so lackluster. There's been no hustle. I see teams just absolutely being able to blow past them in transition because no one wants to run. There is no hustle. And then when it comes to offense, you talk about not having any plays. Doc Rivers just says, all right, y'all just run around and pass the ball. And then if you're open, take a shot. That's his whole idea of offense. Damian Lillard has looked like garbage these past few games. Giannis just does his regular run and dunk stuff or you know, tries to get to the foul line. Outside of that, Brook Lopez doesn't look to be happy with Damian Lillard because Damian Lillard just hucks up a bunch of three-pointers. There's not a lot of team chemistry for the Bucks right now. And looking back on it, Adrian Griffin probably held them together. Like he was pretty much a glue guy at the head coaching position. And that is very crappy on a team like that. Giannis has gotten to be a little bit of a diva. I say this because he has stuck with the Bucks and been pretty loyal to this franchise, but it's more like he's holding them hostage. And the fact that if they don't make the right decisions around him, then he's going to leave. And I look at it when he got his new contract. I think he probably forced him to give him more money than they wanted to. And now they're just over here losing because he wanted Doc Rivers to be the head coach. Something's going to change soon. I mean, there's got to be some type of person to step up on the team to take accountability. Because right now the way they're going, I mean, if you want to be the 6th, 7th seed in the playoffs, or if you want to be in the play-on and take on the Atlanta Hawks or the Hornets or whoever makes it, they'd be my guess. But this seems capable of winning a championship, and if people want to get in the way of that, then that's on them.
Yeah, I never understood Doc Rivers hire when they made it. Look what he did in Los Angeles with the Clippers. He had Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan, J.J. Redick, Jamal Crawford, had Lob City, and he couldn't get. Well, he didn't get the conference finals, did he? I don't think he ever did. And then you go to Philadelphia, and he blows a game 7. Can't win with Joel Embiid, Tyrese Maxey, Tobias Harris. I mean, dude, like Gray said, dude peaked in Boston, and he's rode that for what? How long has it been? 13? 14 years?
No, we're in 2024 now. Long enough.
Yeah. I mean, dude just does not have the ability to coach in the playoffs. It's pretty horrid. I don't understand why Adrian Griffin was fired. I understand the players didn't buy into what he was selling, but obviously they were if they were playing that good of basketball. Yeah. I mean, I think that was really a bull crap of a reason to fire him. Yeah. They were playing good basketball. I don't think. And we see what they do with Doc Rivers. So it's like a huge step down. I think Adrian Griffin will be a head coach in the NBA next season, the way this team has started to look with him not coaching.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Moving on to some All-Star weekend, guys. It went on this past week. You had the three-point contest. Dame won that back-to-back years. The dunk contest, Matt McClung back-to-back there. The skills competition with Anthony Edwards shooting with his left hand. Scotty Barnes failing to dribble a basketball correctly. The Rising Stars tournament, which I think was probably the best thing about All-Star Weekend was that. Then you had Curry versus Sabrina. Curry won that. Then the All-Star game, which was what it usually is, no defense, a lot of offense. Final score, 211-186. Guys, what can NBA do to make All-Star Weekend more interesting? Because these past few years, it has been a snooze fest.
Something completely different than what they're doing. I used to get really excited to watch the All-Star game when it was Kobe versus LeBron in 2013 and 14 when LeBron was in the Heat and Kobe was just coming off his Achilles injury and, you know, getting back to what he was. I used to get so excited to watch it because it was good basketball. And it was the best players in the league going up against the best players in the league. And it was fun. And they had fun with it, but they still played and they played hard. That none of this was that. I'm sorry. And then in the dunk contest and the 3-point contest, and even the Sabrina versus Steph thing, which I thought was one of the best things that they did. I thought that when they announced that, I thought that was so stupid. But then Sabrina almost beat Steph. Talk about how embarrassing that would have been for Steph Curry. But it was a charity thing, and that was great. That was the best thing that they did. What was the court? Why was it lit up green and blue? What do we do? How is that a pleasurable viewing experience? It's not. Make it something completely different. Redo the whole layout, redo the whole every single event, and make the All-Star game back to what it was. Because 211 to 186. I understand looking at the box score might be fun, but watching that game wasn't fun. I used to get so excited. It used to be so fun to watch, like, the best players go up against the best players, playing with guys that they would never play with because they're the best players too. It used to be so much fun, but now it's like the Pro Bowl. Like, nobody cares.
Yeah, I have an idea. Well, let's just get rid of it altogether. It's Ron's course. We continuously sit here and try to act like we can bring up new ideas and say, oh, we can do this, make it more exciting. This can be more competitive. They play defense. Let's be honest here. The NBA has turned to a state of, give me my money. Where's my money at? I'm playing for the money. And I'm not saying they shouldn't, because that's their job. But basketball used to mean something. People used to love basketball, man. I tell you what, whenever I step in the floor, I love playing basketball. And no matter who's on the other side, I want to win that game. And there's no competitiveness. Maybe I should go out there and be competitive. Maybe I should go out there and be in the All-Star game. Or Gray or Alex. Because at least we try to play some defense and win a game. And I know it's a little different from when you've already played 65 or some games to this point, or however far in the season. Boo hoo. This is your job. This is what you're supposed to love. Whenever you come out on the court at the end of the day, whatever, you're supposed to be in love with the game to where, I say this because Kobe had the right mentality the entire time. He wanted to win. He didn't care who was on the court. He was his teammates who was playing defense on him. He didn't care. He wanted to win, and he wanted to win bad. And now there's just a bunch of soft sissies in the All-Star game. They just run around, throw shots up, shot chucker Dame. I talked about earlier. He's just taking it from half court. Everyone just stands around, walks around. If I wanted to watch that, I'd go to my local YMCA and watch a bunch of geriatrics try to dribble a basketball. at this point in time, throw the whole All-Star break away. Since they want to complain about injuries and all that, they can go sit on their butt for the next week and just watch TV and eat Twinkies and slurp down some Yoo-Hoos, because that's all they want to do.
Yeah, I think they need to get rid of the 3-point contest and dunk contest. I mean, we know who the best shooter in the league is. We know who the best dunkers in the league are. We don't need to be shown who they are. They have been, those two contests have been pretty much snooze fest for the past, what, 3-4 since the dunk contest. The dunk contest is Zach LaVine and Aaron Gordon. And the 3-point contest, that's never been entertaining, in my opinion. I mean, it's just like people just practicing shoot around the world. That's basically what they're doing. I mean, like I said, we know who the best shooter in the league is. It's Steph Curry. There's no debate, no argument, no nothing. The skills competition, nobody takes that seriously. You saw Anthony Edwards dribbling with his left hand, shooting with his left hand. Scotty Barnes fumbling the basketball around the court. I mean, nobody takes that seriously. It's not fun to watch. Like you said, Gray, the Curry Sabrina thing was pretty interesting. I compared that to what they did. I can't remember what year it was, but they did Draymond Green and Kevin Hart 3-point contest. That was funny. Yeah. If they can do things like that, people are going to tune in and watch. Like, let's say you get Shannon Sharpe versus Stephen A. Smith in the 3-point contest. People are going to tune in to watch that because it's funny. They're not going to tune in to watch the actual best shooters in the league go out and just shoot around the world. It's boring. And I think for the All-Star game, there's not an easy fix to it because these players are not going to try regardless. One thing they can try to do is implement a thing where the winner, the winning conference gets home court advantage in the NBA finals. They did that in the MLB. Maybe that helps it be competitive. I don't know. They could try to do a tournament type thing, kind of like the Rising Stars, and the winning team gets some sort of a money, winning money or donations to their charity or something. I don't know. Maybe they do a 3-on-3 tournament. There's got to be some, they got to make some effort to change this because this doesn't get us to tune in at all. I think the only thing that people tune in for this weekend was probably the Curry versus Sabrina thing. That might have been it. And there, nothing draws people to these events anymore. Because like the dunk contest, all the dunks have been done. There's not really much anybody else can do to make somebody go, oh, wow, I've never seen that dunk before. I mean, there's just not. There's nobody like Vince or Michael Jordan or Zach LaVine or Aaron Gordon going to be participating in that contest ever again.
Yeah.
Moving on, something else that came out of All-Star Weekend was the G League Ignite. The NBA Commissioner Adam Silver said he's calling into question the future of it, considering the introduction of the NIL and this team's this year struggling to be good at basketball. What do y'all see for the future for the G League Ignite? Because we've seen people come out of it like Jalen Green, Jonathan Kuminga, Scoot Henderson, Dyson Daniels. But we've also seen people struggle to come out of it like Isaiah Todd. So do y'all think it has a future?
No, not at all. It's never had a future. It's been all about the money the whole time. Jalen Green would have been an Auburn Tiger. Jonathan Kuminga probably would have been an Auburn Tiger. Scoot Henderson would have definitely been an Auburn Tiger if it wasn't for this stupid league that they just, or stupid team that they put together and offered these kids $4 million for a year to come play in front of pro scouts when you could go do that at college and get your education for free. But okay, but now the addition of NIL, you can make money in college now. So nobody's going to do this, especially with the lack of success that we've seen with it. I understand Jalen Green and Dyson Daniels and even Scoot Henderson, they've been high picks. Haven't really seen the success that I think even if they went to college. I mean, you talk about a guy like Brandon Miller. Brandon Miller was offered by the G League Ignite like $800,000. For a year, but instead he went to Alabama, played in college, increased his draft stock, and I think got considerably better than he ever would have gotten at the G League Ignite. And now he's in condition for Rookie of the Year with the Charlotte Hornets. So it's this team is stupid. The whole idea was stupid. Get it out.
I'm sorry, I just hung up on the fact that Gray said he wanted Scoot Henderson to be an Auburn Tiger.
Well, no, he would have been an Auburn Tiger.
I don't know.
Are you sure it would have been Aiden Holloway 1.0? Oh,
this was the pre-prospect of it, the Aiden Holloway of today. This is Scoot Henderson's doing his thing in Portland, whatever you want to talk about that. But yeah, like Gray said, the G League Ignite, this is before NIL. This is basically to be able to pay players before they go to the NBA. And now it has no use whatsoever. I imagine that we see a go away here in the next 2-3 years. And there will be a lot more available talent for college basketball, and we should see a lot more exciting teams now that the league would be gone, or hopefully anyway. And honestly, I think the development of players is just going to get 10 times better. I think we're going to see a lot more NBA talented, NBA ready players coming out of college than we do right now.
Yeah, I understood this at the start of it, coming from the fact that you're paying the players. But from the players' aspect, now if you're that good, you're going to get money coming out of college playing for an NBA team. You're going to be a high draft pick. So I personally understood the players' decision to go play for the G League Ignite. It just made no sense to me, and I think it's going to be over here within the next, like Nathan said, probably 2 or 3 years, if not this year. And I'm excited to see these players go back to college or do something else, because when this was pitched, these players were like, hey, let's go get paid. And I was like, okay, well, you get paid, but who's going to watch you? And fans, there's no G League Ignite game on national television. Have y'all seen a G League Ignite game on television?
Nope.
Okay. But you see the college games, college basketball games on television. You see Alabama, UConn, Purdue, Houston on television. So you're getting more exposure playing for these college teams than you won the G League at night. So I think it's a good thing to go away here. All right, before we head out of here, guys, since we're at the midpoint in the NBA season with an all-star break, let's discuss some awards here that are probably the most up for debate. First, with the MVP, no Joel Embiid. He's missed too many games this season with the 65-game requirement. But you got guys like Nikola Jokic, Shea, Luka, Giannis, Jason Tatum. Who do y'all have taking home this award?
Go ahead and pick him. Go ahead and pick him, Nathan, because I would pick him too, but I'll have to go different.
Yeah, Shea Gilgeous-Alexander. He is second in the league in points per game, sitting at 31 points. That's pretty big. But something to stand out, he is the league's leader in steals, averaging 2.2 steals a game. That is absolutely insane. Not to mention the 6.5 assists per game and 5.5 rebounds a game. Dude does it all. He's a four general of the Oklahoma City Thunder. I would say what makes a most valuable player is what he adds to the team he is on currently. You take Shea off the Thunder, we might as well be the Houston Rockets. Shea is just on a different playing level at this point in time. He's comparable to no player we've seen in the past few years. You'd have to go back to the 90s to see the way he plays. Mid-range magician, and the fact that he is so physical on the defensive end, I'd say puts him over the top. So he'd be my MVP candidate. But I'm also very biased because I am a absolutely huge Thunder fan. And I would say this, Luka coming in as a close second because averaging 34 points a game is tremendous. He also averages almost a double-double as well with 9.5 assists per game, and not to mention his 8.8 rebounds a game. So Luka's up there, but I think the fact that SGA is so better off defensively than Luka, I think puts him over the top for me.
I agree with that little standing that Nathan just said, it's Shea at one and Luka at two. I think the difference is different, though. I think the fact that Shea is the best player on the second or third, maybe even the first best team in the NBA right now, proves that he's the most valuable player. And the point that Nathan also made, if you take Shea off the Thunder are nowhere near where they are right now. And then Luka's up there at second because of what he's done offensively, which is absurd. Averaging 34, that's unheard of, as well as almost averaging 10 assists a game as well. You know, he's first in scoring and third in assists. He is just the difference maker offensively. But the reason Shea is above Luka in the standings there is for two reasons. The Thunder are better than the Mavericks. That's number one. And number two is I think Shea is more valuable to the Thunder than Luka is to the Mavericks.
This is the most wide open this race has been at this point in the season in recent memory. Because you think about these last couple of years, it's really just been Jokic, Embiid, Giannis. That's it. There's no argument, no discussion. This year, I think there's a host of people that can win this award. Somebody might enter the conversation later in the season, but somebody else that's Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, I think, is probably the front runner right now. You've got somebody like Jokic, who's won this award twice already. Without Jokic, the Nuggets would be probably one of the worst teams in the Western Conference. They would be. But
you're right.
I think he would be the other guy that could win this award. It just comes down to voter fatigue. Once again, he didn't win it last year. I think mostly due to voter fatigue. He might lose it this year due to voter fatigue and Shea playing out of his mind. So I think this award's going to come down really to the end of the season, who comes out on top in their conference, and if these players continue to play the way they've been playing thus far. Rookie of the Year, Gray, you go first because you're going to be biased here, kind of like Nathan was for the MVP.
Well, all right, so Rookie of the Year, let's take that into consideration of the most valuable rookie to their team. Brandon Miller has completely made a difference in this Hornets team and organization. He's the franchise player. LaMelo Ball's been the franchise player the last few years, even with, LaMelo's been hurt off and on this year, but I think Brandon Miller has established himself as the Hornets' new franchise player. He's the Hornets option number one offensively, and he is going to be the difference maker and the flip of the switch in the culture in Charlotte. That is a rookie of the year. They're going to give it to Victor Wembanyama because he's Victor Wembanyama, and he's averaging 20 and 10 and three blocks. And that's absurd. And that's like all-star numbers, but and of course I'm biased, you know, just like Nathan said, when we were talking about the MVP, I'm biased because I'm a huge Hornets fan, but Brandon Miller has been the biggest difference in either one, any of these rookies team's success, even though we haven't been that successful. But without Brandon Miller, the Hornets are probably sitting at about five wins right now, instead of, you know, 13, 14, wherever we're at right now. So it's that big of a difference. And that's a rookie of the year. He's not, we're not going to win the NBA championship. He's not going for MVP yet, but that is a rookie of the year. He's changing the culture. He's changing the team. He's becoming the franchise player. He's averaging 16 and 4, and he's just getting better. That's a rookie of the year.
Yeah, I think it's pretty easy to say that Victor Wembanyama is going to win rookie of the year. I mean, he's putting up absurd numbers, but I also take into account that he has been able to play overseas in basically what is pro France basketball for the past few years, and he has developed extremely well, and it has been a flawless transition over to the NBA. Some facts: Spurs can't win games. I'm sorry, even with what he does every single night, the Spurs struggle to win games. That's something to be looked into, even with their young core. That's very concerning. Then take a guy in Brandon Miller. I mean, one of the best players I've ever seen play at the University of Alabama. He is absolutely tearing it up with the Hornets. He's going to be a star. I think it's just you got to give him a little bit more time to develop. But what he's been able to do in his first season in the NBA, I could have never imagined. He has been off the charts. And without Victor Wembanyama and Chet Holmgren, who are arguably, you know, not even rookies at this point in time, I think Brandon Miller takes this award, and it's not even close. But of course, Victor Wembanyama exists, and this is technically his first year in the NBA, and Chet Holmgren, his first playable year in the NBA after coming off his injury. I'm not going to pass up what Chet has done this season. He's averaging around 17 points a game as the third option on the Thunder, which that's put us in a situation to be able to win a lot more games than we wouldn't have last season. Not to mention what he's added as a rebounder and a rim protector. Certainly a little bit more because we're not a very finished team, but he's added a lot, and I think he's played extremely well. But this is a two horse race here, in my opinion, at this point in time. Whatever the NBA says, I don't really care. It's Victor Wembanyama and then Brandon Miller and then Chet Holmgren to follow. But let's be honest here. It's Victor, Gap, Brandon Miller, at this point Gap, and then Chet Holmgren. And then you can just start throwing names around. I don't care after that, because it's not going to matter.
Yeah, I think there's a huge drop off from Victor to Brandon Miller. And like Nathan pointed out, it comes Victor has been playing overseas pro basketball for a while now, and he comes here. It's a seamless transition. And he's playing lights out, so you got to give it to him. And
he's also 7'4".
Yeah, I mean, you can't get away from something like Victor Wembanyama averaging 20, 10, and three blocks. Yeah. Before we get out of here, guys, who's your NBA champion if you were the season were to end today? Nathan?
Why are you making me make this pick right now?
Is it the Thunder?
I can't right now do it. I can't. Look, I know we're second in the conference. We've been battling for the first spot. We've been playing some of our best basketball I've seen in a while now. The ceiling's the limit. I mean, this team has a long way to go. Do I make the pick for the Thunder to make championship or win the championship? No, they're not ready yet. We don't have any playoff experience. I love my team to death, and I wish nothing but the best for him and the players on the team. And y'all know this. Y'all watch. We've been through a lot of struggles. But we're not ready
right now.
But I look at teams like the Clippers, who made insane runs, but they just have not been able to put it together. The Suns have a lot of talent, but I think Bradley Beal is just a walking dead man at this point in time. He just kind of runs around the roster now. And then I'll look at the Eastern Conference, and the Celtics have been far and ahead, probably the best team in the NBA. Have a very talented roster, a very well put together roster. Their coach has been very good of keeping them afloat when they haven't been able to play good games. And I really don't see a lot of competition in the East. The Cavs have made a good run, but the Cavs have managed to fall apart in the playoffs and the play-in in the past few years. The Bucks have taken the downhill spiral. The Knicks have been playing some pretty good basketball, but I don't know if their roster is complete enough to be able to win an NBA championship. The 76ers might as well forget it if Embiid's not going to come back. Forget and pack it up. Pacers, surprise six seed. Tyrese Haliburton's been playing very, very good. But they're pretty young and incomplete. The Heat have not been playing very well. The Magic are very young, and I don't know that it's for them. Bulls, I don't even know why they keep trying.
Stop at 10.
Absolutely nothing right over the past few years. They trade for DeJounte Murray. He just runs around. He makes some clutch shots, but what does that put you at? 24-31? Was that the level of success I thought the Hawks were going to get with trading for a guy in DeJounte Murray, or the battle to keep him on at the trade deadline? I'm getting off task here. The Celtics would be my pick at this current moment in time. If I had to pick someone from the Western Conference, it'd be the Clippers at this point in time. But that's not to say that I don't love my Thunder and the fact that y'all two teams aren't doing the hottest right now. I take a little bit of pity on y'all.
Yeah, well, I think Nathan's got a point where it's the deep playoff experience from the players on the current teams. There's one team from each conference that is playing well that could be there, but they didn't. There's hardly any players on those teams that have these deep playoff experience, and it's the Cavs and it's the Thunder. The Cavs haven't been playing it well as of recently, but that's a team that is very, very good. And when they're healthy, they're very, very good. And I think that's honestly the only competition the Celtics see in the East, because the Celtics are by far the best team in the NBA right now.
There's no competition.
The deepest team, and they're so good. But in the West, I mean, you've got
it's a battle, man.
It is a battle. It's a top end battle, and it any of the top five seeds currently in the West, I think, could win it. The Timberwolves, probably not. Never mind. Maybe the 2 through 5 can win it. Because you got the Thunder. The Thunder are just not experienced in those deep playoff games. They're very young, and they're very good, and they're probably playing your second or third best basketball in the NBA right now. But it's about experience. It is about experience. But then you got the Clippers, the Nuggets, and the Suns, who are filled with players with experience at those levels. So I think any one of those three, if in the Western Conference. I don't really like the Suns. I don't like the way that they're built. I don't think they're deep enough to compete with the Clippers or the Nuggets or even the Thunder. The East.
Just do it, Greg. You know what the right pick is.
Boston and I'll say Denver to go different from the Clippers from you guys.
You know what the right answer was, though.
The right answer, guys, is the Detroit Pistons. That is the right answer. They're going to go on the run of a century and win the NBA Finals after starting
the Atlanta Hawks.
Aren't they already eliminated from the playoffs?
No. Not yet. They're trying their best.
They're going to win out and make the play-in, and they're going to beat the Hawks and make the playoffs, and they're going to upset the one seed, and they're going to go on this massive run like the Heat did a year ago, and they're going to win it all. That's Gray's dream about the Hornets this season.
Actually, that is going to happen. We are 3-0 since the trade deadline.
Everybody's acting like we
were so bad doing these massive trades, and then we all of a sudden we're figuring it out. Grant Williams is a stud. All of a sudden, he hasn't been a stud since his junior year.
That is not a word I would describe him.
You call him a yapper.
Steph Curry is amazing. Trey Mann, we just yoinked the Thunder, gave them Gordon Hayward. Hornets are figuring it out. Get LaMelo Ball healthy, get Mark Williams healthy, Brandon Miller,
and they ruined
rookie of the year. Figured it out.
In all seriousness, I think it's going to be the Celtics and the Clippers when the time comes. Both those teams are really hot right now.
I'm glad we could agree.
Yeah, they have a lot of experience. I think that's going to be the issue for teams like I both pointed out, like the Thunder and the Cavs. They both think are really talented, really deep.
But nice.
All right, so that's all we have for today. Thank you for listening and watching, Students of the Game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.